This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you've been struggling with your weight, Mochi Health is here to help. Mochi Health is a long-term weight loss solution personalized to fit your unique needs and goals. Meet one-on-one with board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians who are on a mission to listen. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medications at an affordable set price and get them delivered to their home each month. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 at checkout for $40 off your first month of membership.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
We all know the Pony Express has a big connection to St. Joseph, Missouri, just right up the road where the Chiefs have training camp. But did you know the Pony Express was actually founded by a man who lived right here in Kansas City and hired a guy that transformed the Pony Express into the most unbelievable thing you've ever seen? Here's the story of Henry Avis and the Pony Express. It's really bizarre to me that one of the most talked about things and, like, I don't want to say mysterious things, but curious things that, like, I think every American talks about is something that lasted 18 months.
Yeah.
That's the Pony Express. And obviously, being close to St. Joe, where the Pony Express began, we all kind of have a little bit of a tie to it right here in the Kansas City area. And a Kansas City and Henry Avis, founder of the Avis Rent-A-Car Company, ironically enough, was the last living dude who rode the Pony Express. And he lasted into the early 1900s. I mean, Henry Avis seemed like some kind of unbelievable guy. But I guess I just kind of want to start with you today, just kind of openly having a conversation on, I didn't realize the Pony Express ride was as difficult and dangerous as it truly was. When you read about this dude, can't use stirrups and have to ride like a jockey the whole time from Missouri to the coast. Holy cow, man. Holy cow.
Talk about having to have organization too, because nobody could ride. And, you know, at this time period when the Pony Express was at its height for that 18 months, the reason they needed it was to get mail and to get communication to the West Coast, because so many people had moved via the trail system to the West Coast. And so that ride, and you can imagine choosing, well, I would have been dead on the prairie, but choosing to actually take that route in 4 months, it was good time. And these guys could make it, get mail from St. Joe, Missouri, all the way to California in 10 days. Like, that's quicker than our mail system today.
No doubt.
I mean,
no doubt. Yeah.
Like, you got to be kidding me.
Maybe we should bring the Pony Express back.
Maybe we should. There'd be a little bit more accountability. Yeah. I mean, it took everybody doing their part. If anything in the chain broke, like dominoes, it fell apart. And that was what's so amazing about the whole entire thing. You had to be fearless, of course. So they hired the young guys that are stupid enough to do this. You had to be fearless. You had to be good with horses. You had to have good communication skills, and you had to be fast. And if you messed up at all, it ruined the entire system.
Yeah.
And that's why Henry Avis telling the story. And it's so funny, because our fascination with the Santa Fe Trail and the Pony Express and all of that Western expansion happened right at, which I think is interesting, because nobody talked about it like in 1880. Nobody talked about it in 1890. And this was going on in 1860 to 1861. So right before the Civil War, nobody was talking about this stuff. It was the turn of the century. And there was this nostalgia that happened in the community that everybody wanted to talk about this crazy Pony Express and, oh, the dangers and the Indians that would come in to try to attack them. And it was this lore and this fascination with the West that happened. And here Henry Avis is living in Kansas City like, hey, guy, I was one of those guys that did this. And, you know, and he'd been in Kansas City for all these years, never mentioned it, at least not in the papers or anything like that. And so while he was at the end of his life in the 19 teens and the 1920s, he died in 1927. By that time, he was sharing these stories and people were open to hearing them. And because he was one of the last survivors, his account of what happened is all that survives. Because believe it or not, the records for the Pony Express do not survive. So we might have this museum and all this interesting stuff. We only know so much, you know? And so his account was priceless. It's crazy.
Why do we have such a fascination with the Pony Express? I mean, it wasn't like it would. I mean, I guess it kind of was earth changing and that you could move goods and services and mail and whatnot across the country kind of in record time. And obviously the trains came in, so we didn't have to really rely on antiquated forms anymore. But it just seems like we are more fascinated with that in this country and really, you know, in this part of the country anyway. But I know growing up in New Jersey, we learned about the Pony Express. Like everybody knows about
it.
How did it become such a fascinating thing for us to study?
I think it's because it was right at that time period where the Overland Trail system was going out and railroads were coming in. And so the Pony Express was a great example of what they had to do in order to communicate before you had the wire system, before you could, you know, imagine the Civil War would have been like if we didn't have, you know, the modern telegraph system. And so like all of these technologies kind of merge at the exact same time. And what seems like an archaic concept of riding a horse, you know, 90 miles to drop mail to the next guy was fascinating to them because technology moves so fast. So right after it, because I mean, the reason that the Pony Express died is because of the telegraph. That's why. So, I mean, they were running telegraph lines on the route as they were running the route. Like there were guys working on that at the same time. So I think it's the fascination and the ability to show the reason that the railroad system hadn't connected yet from one coast to the other. The whole reason that St. Joe, Missouri was chosen in the first place, which most people don't know, is because that was the end at that point of the Hannibal and St. Joseph Railroad. Right. So they could ride that train in and then take the communication off that train and get it all the way to the West Coast. So it was a very short time span that actually showed the innovation and how fast technology advanced in such a short amount of time. And we love anything West. Anything with the Wild West. Yeah. And what is better than horses and being able to make it, I mean, unbelievable, make it from St. Joe to California in 10 days.
Yeah, you're right. We are, even today, I mean, even 2023, we're still all fascinated by, you know, the West Coast. Mm-hmm. I obviously just got back from there and was at the end of the Oregon Trail. And they're like, you can see the end of the Oregon Trail. I'm like, I can't wait. I was so excited to see that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, Diane's at the beginning of the trail. I'm at the end of the trail right now. Like, this is the coolest thing ever. Kids sat in the car. They didn't care two iotas about it. But I thought it was, you know, absolutely fantastic. So even to this day, we are fascinated by the West. But there's so many like different directions I want to go with what you just said, and especially about St. Joe, because you said some people didn't realize the railroad ended there. I don't think enough people really realize that St. Joe was the bigger city and had a chance to be the place to be. But Kansas City basically embraced the railroad better than St. Joe. And St. Joe's still smarting from that some 200 years later. I mean, we're up there for training camp every year and you still hear from people. We could have been Kansas City and we embraced the railroad better. I'm like, really?
Yeah. Well, and actually, that's 100% true. Everybody thought that the railroad system in Omaha, same thing. Yeah. Like they thought it was going to we've got the tracks. We're going to keep going. And then Kansas City had a lot of tenacious pioneers and entrepreneurs here. William Gillis, Benoist Troost, Robert Van Horn, these guys that were pushing for the railroad to come to Kansas City, Kersey Coates, and all of that. And they were able to convince them that they were going to be the hub. And they had that horrible thing called the Missouri River they had to get over. And so building the Hannibal and St. Joseph Railroad Bridge, which is what brought it to Kansas City, the Hannibal Bridge. The whole reason that bridge was built is because we got support partially from our senator at the time, which was Robert Van Horn. And so, you know, we were able to steal that traffic and become the hub of the Midwest, if you will. But St. Joe had it first. I mean, we didn't even have, we had very limited railroads in Kansas City at the break, the outbreak of the Civil War. And St. Joe had it. And so that's why, you know, it's hard to believe, but like in 1858, like Henry Avis, this guy born in 1840, we think in St. Louis, we're not really sure, kind of an orphan, rough childhood, comes to Kansas City and tells people later. And I think this is all a bunch of, you know, crap, but he tells people that when he was nine, he started running the steamboat Lucas from Westport Landing to St. Louis. Yeah. Like, who's giving a 9-year old? Okay, whatever.
But you know what? I saw that and I'm like, but those times were different then back
they
then.
They were.
And like 9-year old kids were basically running households at that time. Yeah. You know,
you're not going to get him in charge of an entire steamboat.
Why not?
I mean, so he's probably working on a steamboat, but he ends up meeting a guy, Andrew Drips, who was kind of one of another one of these old mountain men. And the mountain men were still running overland trade routes at the time. And so, you know, he meets Major Andrew Drips, who was married to some Native American women. He died in 1860. First Park was named after him in Kansas City, by the way. It's a little patch of land up near kind of on the west side overlooking the West Bottoms is kind of where it is. But Major Drips, so he's on the Santa Fe Trail and he decides he's got to get the young guys, because he's an old dude at this point, to go with him out to Fort Laramie and some of these stations to be able to deliver supplies, because that's how they're making their money. I mean, people, that's how Kansas Cityans even were making their money off of the overland trade. So he Drips had this trading post near Fort Laramie in Wyoming. And when he got there, Henry Avis, who's good with horses, that's why he was brought along, he realizes that the government had a mail service to Salt Lake City running 3 days a week. And he's like, wait, these guys are getting paid double what I'm getting paid by Andrew Drips. Bye. And he left them, which is kind of interesting, because his connection to Andrew Drips and his family continued after the Pony Express. So he must have not pissed him off too bad. So he ends up, you know, staying out there. And we also have the history, which makes so cool about Kansas City. You know, everybody, Alexander Majors, you know, the Majors house. And it's a beautiful place if you haven't visited. But he was, of course, one of the founders of what we call the Pony Express, which was actually just a subdivision of a bigger company. So him and William Waddell and William Russell, Waddell and Russell went into business together. They were kind of entrepreneurs, and they wanted to go after military contracts, and who better to do it but Alexander Majors, who had already successfully done that with the government. So they got him on board. And so essentially they start this company, and they end up buying other companies. In 1859, there was Hockaday and Company, and that's what Henry Avis had started running. And so St. Joe, of course, was chosen as the starting point, and they were able to find the safest way on a route system, 90 miles apiece, to put stations along the way. Some of them were already forts that the government had, and there were 120 different stations. 120 different stations. That organizing this, I can't even imagine.
I mean, it must have taken longer to organize than it was ever in existence.
Kinda.
I mean, yeah. Seriously, when you think about, you know, every 90 miles or whatever, having a fort, how did you communicate that back then? Did you just start riding and set up a fort and meet some dude that's going to take you to the next one? Like, I mean, the whole concept is so unique and unbelievable.
Think about time.
But, and that's what I'm saying, the timing of all this. Like,
how do you know when they're going to be coming through?
I mean, the timing of that, but late. Just getting it all set up. Like, how did you even communicate that at that point in time? Did you have one meeting in St. Joe and you say, okay, disperse, and this is what we're going to do? No. I mean, like, you know.
And you have to get somebody at each station to ride, plus you have to get fresh horses. So this is how it worked. They say that the Pony Express was set up that there was a fresh horse on the route every 10 to 15 miles. So when you'd be riding at full speed ahead, like you said, like a jockey, like running at full speed ahead, you had 90 miles to go. You're changing horses. You're riding probably 8 horses total. And so you have to make it to each stop. And so essentially the fresh rider would happen about every 75 to 100 miles. So 75 horses were needed total to make one trip across, 75 minimum across the country. And the average speed was about 10 miles an hour. So they used a relay system like you would watch a relay race. So young men rode fast, usually thoroughbred horses, and carried mail. It was 1,966 miles. They went from St. Joe all the way to California. That was, again, what would take a wagon train at the time 4 to 6 months, and they could get there in 10 days. So there were different stations, and they had five big stations at the time. And one of the people that was a station master in Fort Laramie was Seth Ward. And you might go, who's that guy? Doesn't sound familiar. But if you know where Ward Parkway is, then you know that's the street named after him. And Seth Ward was involved too. So Henry Avis, this kid, he's like 19, would run in, and there's these stories of him, you know, running into Fort Laramie, and he had about 2 minutes to get mail and change horses. And sometimes he had to wake up Seth Ward in the middle of the night to come in and unlock the mail pouches, because they had to keep the mail secure, and then to sign his bill before he busted out of town. So again, like, he had these connections to these people that eventually, you know, became pretty prominent Kansas Cityans in and of itself. So, you know, he ends up, his ride was kind of an interesting, you know, portion. He was kind of at the end of Nebraska, and then he would go through like a Horseshoe Station, and then he would end up near Fort Laramie. That was kind of his route. And there were tons of dangers. This sounds like a fun idea, but this is dangerous stuff, because you're all by yourself. If you're riding in the middle of the night, a lot of the time. And so there was a lot of threats with Native American tribes, and the Sioux Indians at the time were like a really big threat. And at the time, Henry Avis is 20 years old, and he's being paid $25 a week. That's good money. So he arrives at Horseshoe Station with the mail, right? He's coming through to grab the stuff, and he gets there, and the relief rider is like, I'm not going. I'm not doing this. It's too dangerous. These Sioux Indians. And Henry's like, you got to go. You know, we have 2 minutes, like, go. And the guy wouldn't do it. And so Henry Davis is like, shit. So he kept going. So, you know, he's already ridden 90 miles. Now he's going to keep going. So he ends up going, you know, past his original spot, and he's not willing to miss a deadline. He gets to Deer Creek, not in Overland Park. He gets to Deer Creek. He finds the station abandoned. There's nobody there, and all the fresh horses are stolen. So he's like, crap. So he just keeps going. That ride, he rode, instead of 90 miles, 220 miles to keep the route going. And they were so impressed by him that the Pony Express, the head guys gave him a bonus of $300.
That's a ton of money. Ton of money back then. $300.
$300 for his exceptional bravery. And
it makes you wonder what they were making off this Pony Express if they had $300. I'm serious. Like, $300 as a bonus is a crap ton.
Well, it's a lot of money. And then he obviously had no fear. I mean, he's 20 and no fear. And he was able to keep doing this for these 18 months. And one of the things he was really the most proud of, which is pretty cool, is that he carried Lincoln's inaugural dress. He was one of the writers that got it all the way to the West Coast. And it was one of the biggest last things they did, because again, why in April, in 1861 did this whole thing die out? Because of the telegraph. Mm-hmm. Those telegraph lines started running, and you could get messages within minutes. And so, like, you think, you're like, oh, all that hard work and all that amazing stuff we did, no one's ever going to care because of the telegraph. But here we are still talking about it because it's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
It really is. The carrying the Gettysburg or the inaugural address. I don't know why I say Gettysburg address.
Yeah, not Gettysburg.
Carrying the inaugural address of Abraham Lincoln's a pretty cool thing. It's the coolest thing you've ever done, Diane. Like, do you have anything in your life that's even remotely cooler than saying you were the dude that delivered the inaugural address to the West Coast on the Pony Express? Like, I don't know. No. I'm sitting here smiling because it's so awesome just to think about.
I know. We are not that cool.
Definitely not. All right.
We're not that accomplished.
Alexander Majors has come up a couple of times. I'm going to plead ignorance. I've been past that house on State Line 100,000 times. I just assumed it was a Civil War general house. I had no idea. Because of the name Majors, I thought major in the army or whatever they
called it. Right.
But I never went in. I didn't know the founder of the Pony Express was actually from Kansas City. I just assumed they were from St. Joe.
Nope. And really, none of them were from St. Joe. The only reason they chose that location is because of the railroad.
The railroad, yeah.
The two other guys, one was from Lexington. Mm-hmm. So Lexington, Missouri. Alexander Majors, kind of came to the area, and he was connected to the military, but only because he was an entrepreneur who was really well known for contracts that he was able to supply for military forts. The reason he moved to our area was for the very reason of the trail system being right here. And so, you know, he made lots and lots of money. The house that he built, you know, obviously still stands and stayed in the family for many, many years until it was saved essentially by a woman, and then became part of the Wardle Majors house group that they have. And they do wonderful programming out there. They're very lucky, as compared to other historic homes in the area, to have still a nest egg of land around them. Because you can imagine, like, they couldn't host weddings if it was just the house on a little plot of land.
Right.
So they're able to do a lot of events and things like that. It is a really, really cool house. I know they do some haunted tours, and they do candlelight tours a lot in the winter, which are really cool to do. I think your girls would actually really enjoy that. You know, it's again, another connection to the idea of the westward expansion being in Kansas City, and really being the hub of expansion. Mm-hmm. And if we wouldn't, you said before, if we wouldn't have gotten the railroad here, right? Or if we wouldn't have been a main section of the railroad, then we would have died out as being, you know, like, well, we got behind with the times. We weren't part of that system anymore. But, you know, they, you know, these founders of Kansas City and these entrepreneurs could see what was going to happen and were proactive. And that's like Henry Avis came back to Kansas City. You know, and he's a nobody. He's like, you know, he didn't go like, hey, I can help train your horses. I ran the Pony Express. They're like, what? Who cares? We don't care about you. But he ended up living with William Mulkey, who was Andrew Dripp's son-in-law. So he comes back to Kansas City, and I feel that's really strange. But he ends up living with Andrew Dripp's, who is a well-known, and he had been in the area since 1828. So I should mention he was like a little kid when he came. But so he ends up in Kansas City for quite a long time and ends up being super involved with horse racing, which we've talked a lot about recently. He got really involved with horse racing. So he was an entrepreneur, became a developer of different neighborhoods because he had so much land, you know, from all these different the Dripp's land, and he had his own land. And so he ended up developing a lot of Kansas City and made a lot of money, but his real passion was in horse racing. And so he made a deal with Henry Avis because he could see that Henry Avis was good with, you know, good with a horse. And, you know, he said, you know, I'll give you meals and let you sleep in my barn if you train my horses. And Henry Avis is like, cool.
Sure.
I got it. And so he ends up being this horse trainer that ended up being very, very well respected by William Mulkey. His opinion mattered. So he had like several horses that did very well. Chiquita was one of them. And, you know, Mulkey would always ask, you know, Henry, how do you think the horse is going to do? And he trusted his opinion. So he would send the horses on these races that Henry Avis would recommend. And Mulkey said at one point, Henry has brought home for him $2,000 to $26,000 a year. Wow. With horse racing. So he ends up doing horse racing, gets married later in life, and then just kind of becomes the, you know, like I said, the Kansas City Star and a lot of these newspapers started to, go back to these times of the past that when, you know, horses and the Overland Trail system, and they became kind of obsessed with it. And when they found out Henry Avis was a part of the Pony Express, he became quite a bit of a part of the newspapers in telling his old stories of the past, which is pretty unbelievable that they actually caught those stories. So the reason we know so much is because, believe it or not, the Kansas City Star did a great job at, wow. at covering these things. And, you know, when Mulkey died, he left part of his big farm. He had a farm in Ray County that he raised the horses on. He left part of that farm to Henry Avis. Avis never had his own kids. So he stayed in contact with his sisters. But, you know, he just lived his life. And, you know, of course, one of the cool things, and I didn't know this. I knew that they did, like, you know, reenactments of the Pony Express. I knew they did that like every once in a while, but I had no idea that they started doing that crap back in like 1920. Like, I'm like, what are they thinking? And so you can imagine Henry Avis is alive. So on the centennial of Missouri's birth, if you will, as a state, he was in the parade through Kansas City, and it was being honored as the oldest Pony Express survivor out there. And, you know, he was an old man then, but he, there were other people still alive. You know, he just didn't know that. He's like, I'm old and I'm the only one left. Yeah. He's like, you know, he wasn't the only one left. But anyway, he really kind of gave a bunch of crap to this reenactment stuff. He's like, you got to be kidding me. Like, so one of the things that they would do is they would start in St. Joe. Sometimes they started in Sacramento, but they start in St. Joe, and then they'd run the route. And, you know, they'd say, we're going to beat the 10-day mark. You know, we're going to beat the 10 days. And Henry Avis is like, of course you're going to beat the 10-day mark. You're riding 10 miles a piece. So instead of riding 90 miles to 100 miles per rider, you're running 10 miles. So one horse, 10 miles, one rider, get off. Next rider, get off. And he's like, that's not fair. That's not how we did it. And so he really pushed back on these reenactments.
Well, leave it and up that, to back in my day guy, though. I mean, like, that guy existed back in the 1900s. Back in my day, we had to ride 90 miles on this. Well, back in your day wasn't always the best, sir.
Well, and it's unbelievable. For 2 years, he did it. And so he's alive watching them do these reenactments and saying, you're not doing it right. Yeah. You know, and there, what I didn't realize is that they still do these reenactments. And I mean, I guess I'm just not, you know, getting up at the crack of dawn to watch somebody ride, you know, in the middle of nowhere, but they are doing these reenactments. And I think that the association runs either, they start in either St. Joe or they start on the West Coast, and they flip every year, you know, so mm-hmm. 1 year it's in St. Joe, one it's in the other. And they recently did one in like June, you know, just recently they did a ride. And I was thinking about Henry Avis, because when I read what they were doing, it was the same exact thing. First of all, they'll let like a 16-year-old be a part of it, which I think is interesting. Mm-hmm. But they're running like 8 miles. Like, that's probably how they convince these people to do it. Like, bring your horse. You only have to go 8 miles. And so I thought of Henry Avis going, well, that's not how it works. You know, that's not how we did it. And then, you know, thinking too, we talked a lot about technology, about the telegraph system and all of this. And we also take advantage of the fact a guy born in 1840 saw airplanes in his lifetime. So when Henry Avis was alive in 1927, this is 1923 is when he said this, but he died in 1927. He was talking about how fast people move. And I found that fascinating, coming from a Pony Express rider, that his job was to be fast and to turn in 2 minutes and get on that horse and to grab that mail. Because he said, you know, in 1923, we used to think we were traveling fast on the old Pony Express, but no, they're carrying mail now across the country in airplanes in less than 30 hours. It's awful to think about, he said. We used to move slower, but we got there all just the same. I'm telling you that we'd all live longer and better without all that speed.
It's true. I mean, what a time to be alive, you know?
Yeah.
I say that to people a lot today. You know, they'll talk about stuff that's going on or whatever. I go, what a time to be alive, right?
Yeah.
And you think about Henry Avis. He was there when, like, steamships were doing stuff.
Yeah.
He was there for the Pony Express. And when he died, airplanes were around. What a time airplanes to be alive, right? What a time to be alive.
He literally, he saw it all. I mean, in a world war, I mean, and the Civil War, that's something that blows my mind too, is that people that were alive and fought in the Civil War were absolutely 100% able to see the World War happening too. How is that even, can you imagine being and seeing and experiencing all of those things and probably sitting back and going, what are we doing? You know, like, we still haven't figured this out. Like, the Civil War was a bad idea. You know, wars are always a bad idea. But the technology just in the wars, like from Civil War to World War One, I mean, that guy saw it all. And it's unbelievable. I mean, he was 18 years old riding a horse thinking it was nothing because he was going to get paid $25 a week. And that's all that mattered to him. And then we look at him as a hero and he's like, you know, there's a lot, you know, bigger people out there, but you know, we have to remember we're just little people. We're little people in a big world. And there's so many things around us. We're going to, you know, we laugh about how quickly cell phones have advanced or how quickly technology has advanced today. And someday you and I are going to be sitting in a rocker, you know, drinking a cup of coffee or whiskey or something and talking about, well, back in our day, you would never believe it, but this is what it was like. And I mean, it never stops. Technology never stops. And we, you know, have to look at the Pony Express. Even though it was 18 months, it was innovative and it was a huge part of the advancement of the United States.
It's really a pretty incredible story to hear about the Pony Express. We're all still fascinated with it 100 and some years later. It really was an innovative way of moving things across the country. But as we see today, technology is always moving forward, and the Pony Express really didn't last but 18 months. It lasted for those 18 months and really served the purpose, but as soon as technology came in, the Pony Express was gone and left to be talked about in history.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro. You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections, but you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almacead. Almacead is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almacead. Find out more and see the university studies at almacead.com. That's almased.com.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knix Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knix, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knix Menswear, your friend in style.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.